Good evening. I call to order the Monroe Public Schools Board of Education work session. Today is Tuesday, August 11th, 2026. The time is 5:31 p.m. Jamie, can we have roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Heck.
Here.
Mr. Jenkins.
Here.
Ms. Myers.
Here.
Mr. Sabadini.
Here.
Mrs. Taurasi.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Yes, here. Sorry.
Can we please stand for the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, I probably don't need to say this, but I will. Before we begin, please note that this meeting is being live streamed and recorded. There are two cameras in use this evening, as usual, one focused on the Board of Education, and another one that may be used during any public commentary or presentations. By participating in this meeting, you acknowledge that you may be captured on video. Thank you for your understanding and for joining us tonight. Next up is discussion items, and I'll turn it over to Superintendent Shaw.
All right, well, thank you very much. Our first item is a staffing update, and so I'm passing around to each of you. So take one and pass it on, please. Our current positions in our district that are from bus drivers through the buildings to staffing, positions and what they look like. And so if you wouldn't mind, I'm going to take a moment and kind of walk down through this. So for our bus drivers, and again, I want to start with bus drivers, they begin and end our day. We have 28, going right down to, we have 32 regular and special education bus drivers. We have 34 total routes, okay? So we're in need of two more drivers. We currently have three sub drivers and need to have eight. And what those eight drivers do is they help take care of athletics. And or if a regular driver takes an athletic trip, then that sub takes over for that bus, that driver. So at any given moment, we'll have four or five athletic trips going on. And or last year, we also had an average of two drivers off every day, just about. So we have to have those sub drivers. You can also see on this document, we have three office staff who are also bus drivers. So we do have that so we call it that that second layer of support if needed. We're trying to really not have them drive. They accumulate a lot of hours through training and then just doing their normal jobs. So drivers in training, I think this is important to know. We have four currently in training. They've hired two more this past week, and then the pending applications. And so when it goes through a pending application, it's through all of the reviews as far as background checks, everything like that, to then go, okay, we can now officially hire. We're looking at a staffing of 42 42 drivers. And so if you think about subs and all together. So the good news is that, and you saw it in the board briefs, we have some drivers that are already, one that was living in Texas and coming back and just needs to pass one test. So we feel confident that we'll be fully set on the first day of school with 34 drivers and then continually building in. And so she's doing a great job of bringing people on for bus drivers. Now, as I go through, I'm going to ask Terry and to take and talk about our elementary buildings.
Sure. So as you can see on the list that we have here, Custer is still in need of two special education teachers and assistants. Hollywood is needing to hire one special education teacher, one interventionist, and again, assistant. Manor is looking for a health liaison and assistant. Raisinville has one special education teacher position open, and they also need assistant. Waterloo has one special education teacher position open, one interventionist position, and they also are in need of assistance. When we look at Cantrick, there is an opening for a social studies teacher. They are interviewing for that position on Friday. And it says here they had one special education teacher position open and that an offer was made to a candidate and that they were awaiting a response, and they did receive that response shortly after this was sent, and that candidate did accept the position. So that makes that one full.
If you could take a moment and dive into why we don't have a number in front of assistants.
Yeah, so assistants, figuring that out is a big puzzle. So each school received its assistant staffing allocations yesterday. Yesterday was principal's first day back to work officially. They've been working all summer, but yesterday was their official first day back. And so now they're working through their allocations to determine their specific staffing needs and vacancies. So the process for understanding how many assistants you need in your building is much more complex than simply assigning a set number of hours to an assistant. First, principals have to consider their different funding sources that they have for their allocations. So they have general fund assistants that are assigned to their buildings. That includes how we provide each Young Five and kindergarten classroom with an assistant for the day. Also within the general fund assistants are lunch assistants and breakfast assistants, and they receive a number of hours for that allocation. Buildings also receive a 31A assistant allocation. Those 31A assistants are assigned to work with at-risk students, and within that, the building gets a number of hours. So, for example, the number of hours allocated to Waterloo, I believe, is 150 hours of 31A time. So there's that allocation. And then there's also an allocation for student-specific support. And so within that, students have assistant hours assigned to them based upon an IEP need or a 504. Need, which could be anything from medical to some type of anxiety or whatever it is in their 504 plan that they need support for. And then those student-specific hours, they can range from a student who gets 10 hours of support a week all the way up to a student that gets 37.5 hours, which is considered full-time. So we call those kids door-to-door. But there's that range in there. So determining that actual number of assistants that you need in your school requires those principals to piece together those allocations while also considering an employee's schedule and the trainings that they've had. So to put some context to that, just to give you some examples of what that looks like actually in the building, principal may have a kindergarten assistant for a classroom that has 25 hours assigned to them. That's typically what our kindergarten Young Five assistants have, is 25 hours a week. And then they may choose to work an additional hour and a half a day, which would be another 7.5 hours a week, as a lunch assistant. So they're doing the 25 hours kindergarten assistant, and then they're also doing 7.5 hours a week as a lunch assistant, giving them 32.5 hours total. Another example might be a student who's in a first grade classroom who has 20 hours of time assigned to them based on their IEP, and maybe that assistant wants to be a full-time assistant. So they are able to be offered an additional 17.5 hours of 31A time, making them a 37.5 hour a week employee. So there's all these different pieces that principals have to put together. On top of that, they then have to look at the assistants that are returning to their building. The assistants that have left their building, what the vacancies are, and again, like what the different trainings are that those assistants have had that make them able to accept certain positions. So They're working on this right now. It is a process, and I know, you know, the principals want to have those numbers and the different positions that they have available. They want to have that information available ASAP so they can get people hired to fill any vacancies they may have. So they all do have assistant openings in their buildings, but at this time we just don't know the number. And I don't know if I totally confused people or not, but.
Yeah. So that's why you'll see, like, on Friday we have our event at Waterloo. It's really so we can bring in people as go through the process and work to get them hired and then get into trainings that would be available these next 2 weeks prior to school starting. In the past, what happen is a building, and I remember specifically one building last year, the administrator literally on the phone calling to line up people after they had figured out, okay, I'm going to need probably six more people because I've already done all the math, moved people around to accommodate my hours. So everything is based off of hours. The other variable that comes into play that we don't ever fully know is, so when we're finishing up the year, we have our students coming out of the preschools and into our buildings. So we'll have an idea who's going to need an assistant, but how much time, that's all given to us as in the month of June. And so that's why when we come walking back, like, okay, we're going to need more supports. From a funding mechanism, understand that if it is a person that has an IEP, that cost is covered. It's 1 year in the rears. I mean, we would see those monies back next year, but that money is covered through the ISD for us. So when it comes to the general fund, again, that's probably the big one we've always talked about. From a general fund side of it, it's about you have the cafeteria coverage. So you have people in the cafeteria. You're going to have people out on the playground. You've got people that are going to be taking and standing at the door as kids are coming in, getting them to their classrooms, right along then what we talked about in the past practice of in the Wi-Fi and kindergarten rooms, that support.
Not to cut you off, but the breakfast and lunch assistance, the time that they're serving the kids, that's charged to food service. But the playground and the meter greeters is kind of what we call them in the morning. That does come out of general fund.
I forgot about that. So it's only recess. So the challenge becomes, this is why having an electronic payroll system is they have to, you know, you could have a person that's doing being paid out of three different funding mechanisms, okay? And so we have a way that we keep track of it, but that's also how you control your cost. And so we bill everything accordingly. So that's how the elementary world looks like. David, you want to talk about secondary, please?
Certainly.
Monroe, on the back of your paper, buddy.
Monroe High School, I'm going to go in a little bit different order. Monroe High School is short currently one special education teacher. Orchard Center is fully staffed without any vacancies. And Monroe Middle School, Mrs. Todora mentioned that today they filled their Spanish position. They did interview for a counselor position. I am not sure who she, if they decided on someone or are going to sometimes extend the search. They are short one special education teacher, one interventionist, and one restorative practice coordinator or analyst.
So one of the things we haven't shared is how quickly things change. So it was yesterday that we received the notification that our restorative practice coordinator analyst had resigned. And so that's why that's out there now. So a lot of our positions this time of year are very fluid, okay? I think from a special highlight, though, is if you looked at the elementary, all of our general education course classrooms are covered, which is a wonderful milestone. Mm-hmm. Mr. Payne, you want to talk about operations, and then we'll dive into questions.
Sure. So in our department, excuse me, we currently have 9 custodial cleaners, our contracted cleaners that are open. We interviewed today, and we're going to make offers tomorrow for 2 more. We have 1 assistant supervisor. We did interviews today and are also going to make an offer for that position tomorrow. Our custodial team lead, there's 2 open positions, but normally that's, I want to say, like a homegrown position. If we see someone excels or starts to do good, we offer that. We don't usually just hire for that. We have 2 maintenance positions that are open, and again, we use our maintenance contracted to fill that usually to see, get them in, try them out, see how they do, and then We offer them those maintenance positions. We have four maintenance contracted positions open, and today we interviewed, and we probably will make four offers tomorrow on those. And our maintenance is our maintenance and grounds. So pretty much our entry-level maintenance position to assist our current staff in kind of filling holes where needed based on the season. Some are a lot of mulch, a lot of grounds, a lot of trimming, stuff like that. We do have two technology support specialists. We interviewed yesterday and today for those positions. We have two that we want to do background checks on and contact some previous employers before we make an offer. But if they all come back, we hope to make two offers on those as well. We have three technology contracted positions open, and we're planning on making an offer for two of those after interviews yesterday and today. The only area that we're really not concerned, but we really need to try to get more applicants is our custodial. It seems like every couple weeks you might get one or two, and then you might schedule an interview, and out of two or three, you might get one that shows up. So we just continue posting. Wendy's done a good job helping us keep pushing it out. We try to share it on Facebook, and each week we try to interview what we have. So.
So that's what Monroe, what we look like at this very moment in time as we lead less than 3 weeks away from that first day of school. Like I said, you can see on here, we do have positions open. They're interviewing and moving along to try and get these positions filled. But at this time, I'll open it up for questions.
It looks like, and no surprise, that special ed teachers are premium.
Yes, sir.
Do a couple questions there. The special ed teachers for middle school and high school, do they require different certification than elementary school? Or is it very similar? Can they go back and forth?
I think I'm going to give you a vague answer in that there are different certifications when we interview folks. A lot of times they're early childhood. Someone who has an early childhood who would interview for a secondary position, that would not stop us from pursuing them based on the talent shortage. So yep. There are different special education certifications.
And if I can add on,
please.
The ISD can also submit information to MD to get an authorization for them to work outside of their certification as well to fill that vacancy. And the state is aware of the special education teacher shortfall within, I'm sure, not just our state.
Are they doing anything at the university level to get more applicants through there? Or is this a shortage that's going to go on for several years?
I wish I could answer that for you. I'm not sure what the universities are doing to recruit people into those programs. I know we have a few teachers in progress of getting their master's degrees in special education services to obtain that additional certification. So there are people out there willing, but you know, there's sometimes some roadblocks of getting that additional education.
Is that what it requires, a master's degree?
That is one of the pathways. If they have a bachelor's degree in education, to get a master's degree with the additional special education coursework.
The other factor you have on that, too, is because we run a team teaching model, that they're not a special education teacher is not the teacher of record. If you were the teacher of record, you have to be certified in that area. So if you were teaching math and you're the teacher of record, you have to be math certified. But because we do more of it's a team teaching, they're going into the classroom, you don't have to have that cert then. You're just a special education teacher.
To go to the question about universities, Bowling Green State University did something that was pretty unique. All of their early childhood folks 2 years ago left with an early childhood to be like the classroom teacher and also a minor in special education, which was really thoughtful of them. However, what they found is that minor required additional courses, and folks were not interested, and their numbers in that early childhood programs dwindled a little bit. I mean, it was great for those candidates to come out because if they didn't find a classroom job, they had a minor in a field that has a lot of vacancies. However, we were disappointed when we went back to Bowling Green this year because they were no longer requiring that because of the lack of interest in the challenge. So,
where are you going?
So I would have waited till board member commentary to address it, but since we're talking about staffing at the present moment, we used to see, unless I'm missing it, we used to see resignation letters in our board brief packets. I don't think I've seen a resignation letter for months now.
Okay.
So it just gives us a flavor for why someone's leaving. I mean, we all know that there's a two sides to a story issue, but it does give us a flavor. So I don't know when that stopped, but I feel like we really haven't seen them for quite a while.
Yeah, it's been probably at least a year, maybe more.
I can speak to when it stopped, when it was moved to where you guys, when it was decided that you weren't going to vote on the resignations. Yeah. At that point was when you stopped including it with the work packet because you were no longer voting on it. Mm-hmm. But I can still get them.
Some kind of data.
I'd like to see them for sure.
No, we'll add that each week. It'll be part of the board briefs.
I would get it with the board packet stuff. So
right, I mean, HR can each week put it in their board briefs.
Okay. Board packet, you mean?
Yeah. Well, no, so that way, because of the quantity, it'll just be in your board brief. So each week, you know, like we had three resignations last week. Here are the three resignations. It's just it's each week, just place in board briefs for you.
I just didn't think we typically put that kind of information in board briefs.
It's no difference between a board brief or...
We just never did. I'm
especially
just
emailing it out.
Yeah, we always got in the packet.
Yeah.
Either way.
Board brief packet.
Same thing.
Same. Yep. Yep.
Thank you.
Anybody else with any comments or questions?
I do. The other day when we were sitting here, which kind of dredged this up, was we were talking about... there was a, Andy, you or someone had mentioned that we needed to hire 40 behavioral assistants or whatever their category was, which kind of triggered like, wow, how do we all of a sudden from June, having discussed the staffing all the way up till the end of June when the budget was decided, now we're seeing at the beginning of August and we're like 40 just in those categories. That's a lot of staff. That's not just a few staff. So, you know, I pulled up the projected numbers that we were told of how many staff you needed in each of the categories. I can understand you might need another one here and there, but I have a difficulty comprehending that you weren't aware you might need up to 40. So that part of it didn't make sense to me because I'm looking at these and I'm like, where did they go in this chart that said, this is the staff that we need. These were all the green and the reds. I picked up the one that had the most green, so I'm assuming that was the most updated one. Like, if you thought you needed 40 more of them, I don't understand why they wouldn't have been budgeted in the budget we just passed for this year. So I understand that we didn't know the 31AA and understand or whatever the 31Ms or those grants, but I pulled up their categories and there's a lot of things you can use that money for. And there's a lot of ways that you can use that money for different things. So again, 40 staff is a lot. I just didn't understand how we went from this less than 2 months ago to needing that many. So I thought, okay, so maybe I'm missing something. So I went to this chart that we were provided. Mm-hmm. And we had been given it updated a couple of times. And although, you know, I got to hold it really far away to see it because it's really tiny. But I went through there looking for where anybody said that this is the amount of staff that would be needed in any of these buildings. And someone's going to have to show me because I can't find it. And these were the two documents that we were given that says, this is what we need to staff our buildings. It wasn't like, this is what we need to staff our buildings, and hey, just a heads up, we might need 10, 20 more, or 40 more. I think that would have changed the conversation on what our budget items look like. And I understand we use the word in technology, I mean the word that is coming out of a grant, and I understand that, but grants have a purpose that can serve greater purposes as well. So I think that we need to look at how does this impact the overall funding. So it's not like, okay, it's not general fund, therefore we don't have any say in it, because we have to look at all of it. And bringing in 40 more staff is a lot. I'm just like, where did all this come from? So I'm like you, where's all the resignations? You know, where do we see these big quantity of resignations. I think I've asked it every week I was here. I've asked about staffing. I've asked about resignations. I've asked about hires. So I know you all are very intelligent people. You've all been doing this a very long time. Just to say we had no idea we would need the quantity of staff we need, I doesn't make any sense to me, considering we talked about it nonstop for months. I'm just trying to understand how the two fit together. And to me, it doesn't. I don't know how it does. I get it, custodial, you have a lot of turnover in there. I didn't even mention custodial because I know you have a lot of turnover in there. I know you've had some turnover in your maintenance. I haven't mentioned some of the teaching positions because I've seen that there has been some teaching positions that there has been some turnover in. I didn't mention special ed because we know the special ed need is higher, so therefore I didn't mention any of those. It's the, I think, Andy, you mentioned it as behavioral.
No.
And / assistance.
So these, and I'm going to ask Terry to hop in right here. No, these are, when we talk in terms of classroom people, these are classroom assistants. When we the certification levels, that's not 40, okay? So, like, for example, RBTs, we have 13. Right now, we don't have 13. We have how many RBTs?
10.
10, okay? So we're down 3 there. And so that's what gets filled. When we get to the support, I don't want to call it support staff, it's classroom, it's the aides. That's what we're really diving into here.
I'm looking at it. I'm not mixing certified staff with uncertified
but
staff.
Can I ask a clarifying question? Is the document that you had up with your paper clips? No, ma'am. The other one.
This one?
Yep. I believe that's our savings document. I don't think our aides are on there.
I'm just asking. I was looking for RBTs because that's what Andy had mentioned, and he mentioned behavioral. And then I asked the question, what is their role? Do they have a dual role?
Right.
Can they for instruction in the classroom?
I think that 40, though, that 40, though, is not, those are not the positions that are on that savings sheet. And I might be incorrect, but I do feel like that those 40 aides or whatever we're going to call them, paraprofessionals, like those are budgeted. Those aren't new, hey, we need these.
I'm just asking where they were at in all these documents of staffing stuff that we got. Like, I just want to know where they are. Because, for example, on this one, it had, wait, second page, sorry. On this one, it said, how many RBTs do we need? And it said 11. There was 2025-26 school year. So last school year, it was identified that there was 11 that were needed. And for 26-27, it was identified that all 11 were needed and they were going to stick there. Now, when you talk about the certified, it listed 2 remaining at 2. So, you know, I'm a big component of instructional assistant that's going to help with the education of the students. And so I'm trying to figure out where does this all fit in.
I'm sorry, if I may. Please. I don't believe on any of the staffing documents that we communicated when we were talking about the budget. I don't believe that we included the classroom assistants because the number is so complicated because it's based on hours and not number of people. And it was difficult for us to discern in a way that would be meaningful in the conversation. So RBTs are a separate part of assistance that's more quantifiable. Those are actually 11 people, and it's not necessarily based on hours. So on all those documents you're referencing, the classroom assistants and the special needs assistants and all of that is not listed on there because we didn't have all of the allocations from the ISD. We didn't know what all the students were going to need. Everything hadn't been necessarily projected out by the number of people. I have budgeted a number of hours based on historical needs. So that's why you can't find a number to tie what has been discussed as far as what we have open. Because in that earlier conversation in the spring, there wasn't a meaningful way to relay what the needs were at that time and what we anticipated.
So what's interesting is, so you had this many 30 students in a classroom, right? Most of the time, that's the classroom that moves on. We understand that there have been some variations, but they all came from within our system, minus the influx of a small amount that came in this year. So those all had IEPs, 504s. They were already identified in a classroom as having needs. So I can understand for you saying that we had an influx of some needs in a classroom, but to say we didn't know that there was going to need three staff in a fourth grade classroom that had the same students that already had those needs in third grade, that doesn't make sense to me. You do know those things. The only thing you don't know is what's coming into kindergarten, most likely, any of the new people that come in. But I don't see how that says, we can't tell you how many we might need. Now, maybe the exact number, I understand that. But to go from our entire budget of a staffing conversation to say, well, all of a sudden now we didn't include these because, I mean, I think that we're adults here. We're capable of understanding what you're capable of communicating. And, but you know, I think it could have been some information that we could have used at the time.
But the variable comes, I shared the number 40 with you because that's our target number we need to work towards because it's the variance of hours. So we look at here, all of us could be applying and all of us might be only able to put in 10 hours a day or only 15 hours. It's the number of hours that we're talking about. When it comes to the positions that you're referring to on that page, as we've said before, that's what's in the budget. That's what we're going with. If we said, so right here we're looking at, for example, BCBAs. That's a great example. We just had a resignation from a BCBA. We said we're going to have two. We're down to one. So we're going to need to hire one. RBTs. How many did we say? RBTs on looking at this doc was 11. We're not at 11, so that's what's going to get filled. Those are on that list because those are people that we can, this Friday, begin to interview and try and get in here. When we look at just classroom aides, the supports and the classrooms, as Cassie said, it's the variance of hours becomes that factor. And that's why when we talk about how many staff we employ, we can talk about heads, you know, head count. Well, that's a huge number, but then in the support staff area of aides, but when you look at the number of hours, that's a different full FTEs. That's a whole different creature. So the target is that when you think about the number of buildings that we have, that's why it's very easy to go, okay, well, that building is going to need five people. And what the other part that we are always focused on, too, is we have to have people as substitutes for aides. And because if we have a student that has an IEP, has other supports, we have to have people ready to go into those positions when people aren't there. And when you think
but
of numbers.
But don't the sub list provide that?
What's that?
Don't you have a sub list that provides that?
So, but that sub pool that we people of employ people that we have, we always have to keep it stocked because there's sometimes that some of our people that would be a sub, they could actually turn into and be just a regular full time person. So you take that list of roughly 40 people we want to try and get on. Some of these people are going to be they're going to be subs. Mm-hmm. So we're like, hey, we've got you in our system, and when we call, you think about the number of buildings, number of people we have in as a substitute person. You know, was described in each classroom. You have a person in kindergarten and first grade. Then we have our one-on-ones with our students. Those positions right there at any given moment, you might have three, five people out in a day. So that's why you need that sub pool, especially when it comes to the one-on-one assistance that are provided to a student. So again, we are making sure adherence to what was in the budget. On this, so we're not going above when you look at that posting there. Those are positions that we have vacant right now. We have RBTs vacant. We have BCBAs.
I think we have to understand the perception that's out there. You know, it was very public the need to cut staff. People lost their positions. They need to cut the budget. I mean, that was in the community. Everybody heard it. And it was, everybody's like, okay, we got to do it. And now people are like, so you're having this big, huge hiring after you just said that you had to do all that? And I'm like, okay, what's my answer to that? Why do we need to do that? If you tell me that it's to increase like we did in 2025 or when the budget got overdone we're going to raise grades, so we spent all this money to raise grades, and you're telling me you're going to put assistants in the classroom to work one-on-one so that they can learn, I would be like, okay, that's something, then why didn't we have that included at the beginning? But, you know, when we're looking at behavioral staff and things like that, I think that's a different story. But again, it's perception. We are doing a huge high, you said that they were behavioral.
I did not. I'm,
okay.
On the other day, I look at it and I said, we are hiring 40 support. And on that document that you read, you went straight to behavior techs and RBTs, okay? That's where your eyes went. We still have crossing guards.
I thought
we
that's
have crossing guards on there, and we also have building
support. But I also told you why I didn't bring up any of those other groups, because we have seen the turnover. I've seen all those turnover. I did not see turnover in assistance. I did not see turnover in these other categories. And seriously, Andy, the reason I went to that is I thought that's what you said, so my apologies if I misunderstood that. But I did not see turnover in 40 staff that we need to replace, which is why I didn't bring up any of those.
The behavior techs, the ones that we referred to in the behavior side, we have an allocation that we brought to the board back in June. And that's the allocation we're living with and working with. So that's that number. So those are just key positions that we need to have filled. But when you think about that, when I say that 40, that's our target, the vast majority is down in the AIDS.
You know where I saw it? On the posting. It listed behavioral techs and whatnot. That's where I saw it.
Right now, we only have...
Yeah, that's where I saw it. Behavioral techs and RB. That's where I saw it.
Right now, we only have three people engaged in a conversation. So let's... if anybody else... do you have anybody... Gary or Stacy, anything you want to ask?
I don't.
Because I have a question I have. Carrie, do you have anything?
No.
So with the assistants, I'm assuming we had some sort of historical data on what we use as assistants. So would that have been something we should have had as part of a conversation? Did I miss part of a conversation? Because now all of a sudden we're talking about the assistants. And, and I understand that's probably the last, I understand how you're explaining it. It's the last thing that goes, because when the principals come back, they've got to look at all what IEPs, everything that's in the, but I would think you have some historical data that says this is how many assistant hours we're going to need on a average year. Yep. Some years it might plus 10, minus 10, but I don't. Would that have helped if we would have had that, Darla, as part of the conversation?
Yeah, I definitely think that would have helped, because it wouldn't have felt like this is an add-on, and that's a perception.
I'm just trying to
bridge
a gap there.
I'm
trying to bridge a gap.
I appreciate it. I'm just saying to you that when you look at the flyer, it says assistants, crossing guards, behavior technicians, RBTs. Okay, the behavior techs, RBTs are to fill positions that are on our list that are not filled. Okay, kind of like what Dave was showing there. When it comes to the assistants, that's classrooms. Again, those are positions that we have to have backups in place, and so, and that's. And so we do have openings, and because you do have people that their hours shift, and so as each building figures out what they have to do, that's where it shifts. It's not like their hours. I think the best answer I can give you, though, is their hours didn't increase from last year to this year. The only spot that would have increased is if a student comes in that with an IEP. Kindergarten, we have students that transfer in. And that's the other factor, too, is we will have a lot of transfers into our system this year from outside of our system that will require that independent facilitator or that one-on-one. And so that's what we're trying to get staged for, because it doesn't do us any good on that very first day to go, okay, well, oh, look, I'm going to need three one-on-one assistants, and we have nobody.
Why do we anticipate that? I'm just asking.
That would go back to the historical side.
So
move-ins.
To her point, though, when you're just talking about the when you see the flyer
in the
community, those acronyms.
Yeah.
If I asked my mom what those acronyms meant, she would. God bless you, Mom. I don't think she's listening. She wouldn't know what those meant. She would just see hiring.
Yep.
So that's where maybe what Darla's saying is the community might perceive all of a sudden that we're hiring people when in fact we're really not hiring teachers. But we don't really, that's not seen in the acronym words. So I think if you're in the general community, you might, that could be misconstrued. I don't know there's a good way to explain that to people. Yeah, but, you know, until you get in this acronym soup of all this stuff, you don't really know,
correct,
which is, I would say, a large percentage of our community.
Yep.
I see, Gary, you're ready to get up to the mic there. Go ahead.
I'm listening.
No, you're ready.
I'm going to simplify this. Please tell me if I'm wrong, okay?
Please.
We're talking 40 bodies that are going to divvy up X amount of hours that you allocated. Is that correct? It's not necessarily mean that everybody's going to get 40 hours a week.
Correct.
Somebody might get 10 hours. Somebody might get 8 hours. But we need 40 bodies spread out as assistants, yeah, to cover X amount of hours throughout the schools. Is that correct? So we're not necessarily hiring a person full-time with benefits and everything that goes with it.
But don't we have assistants already? Where'd
we
they
do.
Go?
Just a second, Darn. I want to make sure that so I can get corrected here if I'm wrong. Is my thinking correct?
Yes, I think your thinking is your thinking is correct. The only thing that I do not know for sure is the number of 40. I don't know what the number is that buildings will need until they look at allocations, staff who are returning, incoming students that they have, all of those different factors that they have to piece together. You know, they have to put things together, contact the assistants that they had last year, see if they are coming back and, you know, what their wish is for themselves in terms of hours and their schedule, then see what they have left over, piece those things together, see who they can hire to fill those. But like you said, like somebody might just want to be a lunch assistant for an hour and a half a day and be employed for 7.5 hours. We have people who do that. So, you know, that's one person. Another person might want full time at 37.5 hours. So the number is hard to quantify at this time. Yep.
So on Monday, the principal's going to come in. I'm going to make up a scenario. And he says, Terry, I need 100 hours. And I need these hours to be allocated zip, zip, zip. Now you're going to allocate bodies to cover that.
So the principals get their allocations from us. They already have their allocations. Yep. So, yes, so they have that, and they're working with that right now.
And then they'll tell you, okay, I think I need a lunch assistant, and I need a crossing guard. I need something else for these X amount of hours.
Right.
So it's not necessarily bodies.
Correct.
It's bodies divvying up X amount of hours.
Correct.
Correct?
Correct.
Okay, now I follow what's going on. Okay.
And one last point that that may bring more clarity. I use that number of 40 as it's more a goal. Because we need to build in, it's back to the sub side. There's been times in the last few years that we'll have students come in, it could be pick the month, and they need a support, and then we're scrambling. And so our goal is like, let's get them on. Now as a sub, you're not getting paid. You're like, yeah, I'll sub for you. So it's more that we have people identified. So that's where it comes to. But the big thing is there's no more hours being provided this current year than was provided last year in totality. And when it comes to like the RBTs, those positions were already in our budget work said how many is going to be that. So that didn't shift either. So, but I did write down, Brian, to your point about clear language and postings.
Yeah,
we still break out the words.
People who misconstrue anything, but
it sounds like a puzzle that's always changing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like the assistants that are coming back and staying, and then the students that come and go. So it's always a changing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's hard to get exact numbers.
Do the assistants float between buildings, or are they assigned to a specific building?
They are assigned to a specific building.
Okay. Now, are they through Edge's staff, or we hire those? Are they hired directly?
Mm-hmm. All right. Directly.
Directly?
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. We have a collective bargaining agreement with the parapros.
Okay.
So that X amount of hours, you've already figured into our budget?
Yes, I do have assistance budgeted in all those categories.
Okay.
As far as 31A, general fund, lunch and breakfast.
You can see where this gets a little confusing for us.
Okay.
It's a lot.
Complex. Yeah, I get it. Took me a while, but I got it.
So that was my whole point in bringing this up. There's a perception out there that we need to be mindful of, that we're not We're not, we're clearly communicating that we didn't just, you know, go through all that and then bring all these in, the first part. Second part is a clarification on who we're bringing in and the reason for them. Mm-hmm. And that's what a staffing discussion's about. Yep. So.
Appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay. So move on to the substance policy procedure review.
Okay. There you be. Take one and pass it on. So the first item that's coming your direction was around the idea of policy, okay? So in looking at our policies, policy 5530 is the drug prevention policy, and I'm using pulling this one out because if we read through that very first paragraph, in accordance with federal and state law, the board hereby establishes a drug-free zone, school zone, that extends 1,000 feet from the boundary of any school property. The board prohibits the use of possession, sale, and so forth. This is the student section, okay? This is not anyone else. This is student-specific. When you dive down through further, it gets into, and this is why we went down to letters D and E, that we have to have provide standards of conduct that are applicable to all students, which clearly prohibit, at a minimum, the unlawful possession, sale, use, distribution, or illicit drugs and alcohol by students on the school premises or as part of any school activity. And then and this came out of even last night's conversation, so that's why we said in there, CMPS student handbook for code of conduct. And then the next line, too, include a clear statement that disciplinary action, sanctions up to and including expulsion and referral to law enforcement, so adding in the words law enforcement, for the prosecution, taking out the word will, shall, because shall is has to, be imposed on students who violate the school standards of conduct and description of those sanctions. So this policy, so it's not the recreation of a policy, it's taking into what we already had mm-hmm. that calls out that drug-free zone, calls out that we had to already have code of conduct, and then clearly then also calling out that this would be also then mandated to be turned over to law enforcement. And then on the next page, we're going to get into David's going to take here.
Can we address this part before we move on?
Yep.
The one thing I went back and re-listened to our last conversation to kind of refresh myself. The one thing that was very clear, it wasn't that sanctions could go up to and including expulsion and referral to law enforcement. It was, it will be referred to law enforcement for a drug offense.
Correct. That's why we put the
it
word shall in
there. It says up to, but this says up to and including expulsion and referral. I would like it, and I thought that was what we had talked about, that it will result in a referral to law enforcement for sanctions, so that it will refer. How, and addition, it could lead up to expulsion in the, so the other side, because we talked about a dual track.
Yes,
the first was law enforcement. It will go to law enforcement. No, nothing on that one. And then the other stuff was the track that could lead up to expulsion, what would lead you to the handbook.
And if the commas are in inappropriate places, we can change that out, okay? That's because the way I was reading it is that up to including expulsion, that's us, and shall, and referral to law enforcement for prosecution.
I just think imposed. It needs to be read.
So the idea around the shall be imposed is that up to including, so there'll be some form of discipline that's low level, up to and including expulsion, and referral to law enforcement shall be imposed. Mm-hmm. So that, if you read in that context, is here's what's going to happen is that the school is going to have some form of discipline up to and including expulsion, and it's going to be handed over to law enforcement, and that shall means that's what's going to be imposed onto the student.
Could I read for you on page 57 of our handbook? It says substance abuse policy. I know what language from the board. We will be changing that to protocol because this isn't the policy, what's in here. But it says MPS, this is what we currently have in our handbook. MPS maintains a zero tolerance policy for substance abuse and the sale of any illegal substances. We will utilize all means possible in order to enforce this philosophy. All disciplinary actions taken by MPS shall not be intended or shall not replace in any way such action as may be taken by the state of Michigan or any of its political subdivisions or agencies. So I think that's important with what both of you are saying is that there is a dual track, and just because there's a referral to law enforcement doesn't mean a student won't be punished in school and vice versa.
The difference is that before it was subjective to decide which one you wanted to do. The policy, by our suggestion, is it will be referred to law enforcement. So we have it. We are drug-free zone. We have zero tolerance. Mm-hmm. Drug, whatever you want to call it, will be referred to law enforcement for what did they call them? Infraction
citations and a fine. Yep.
And whatever else they decide. So, you know, I think that ensuring, because right now, just because it says that, it didn't make it to law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And we need to ensure that if we're going to take the stand that we said last time, it must refer to law enforcement, all of them.
And that's what we've shared, is that's exactly it. So in letter E, that's what's going to happen. And
I think it should be clearer.
It is clear. Up to and including expulsion, so that's your action, and referral to law enforcement for prosecution shall be imposed. So that tells us we're doing both items.
I think if you just change the order of that sentence and say referral to law enforcement for prosecution shall be imposed and up to and including expulsion.
Through the district policy.
Code of conduct.
Procedure.
So that way no one's reading it and saying up to and including expulsion and up to including law enforcement. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good idea. A good way to clarify that.
Or just take that up to and including out and say discipline per the district policy.
Because we want them to know that it will automatically go to law enforcement. Right. There's no questions asked. And if you make that clear in your policy, we are a zero tolerance. I don't know if that's in here. I know it's a drug-free zone is in here, but I don't know if zero tolerance is.
I'm assuming that Jeremy has some watch over this, because I'm assuming we could have a lawyer get involved with a student and go back to this policy, and if it's not completely, because they can parse words like nobody's business. So I'm assuming that we're going to let Jeremy have a look at it.
I know that in other school district they do hold that zero tolerance, and that they've asked or shared to their SRO that you do this, they're going to be given a citation.
Well, maybe just a suggestion that Jeremy take a quick look at this to make sure that we are, because we are communicating one thing very clearly, but I know that commas and sentence structure to a lawyer can become a reason. And someone could retain a lawyer if they're going to be expelled for a drug offense, right?
You might want to substitute, instead of referral to law enforcement, citation through law enforcement. So that they don't have an excuse to not do it.
That's verbiage Jeremy should take
so
a look at.
To that
they've
point.
They've already said they're not going to just, it's you know, the language is we make a referral, they don't do anything. They say, well, gosh, we're not getting them. So it's I believe now, based on this conversation, that we're all at the same table and we're all understanding that, you know, we support what the sheriff has put forward as a standard in order to follow his protocol, that we as a board are making a policy to ensure that we follow that. At the same time, there is a protocol to go through. And I re-listened to that meeting last night, today, and the other thing that was in there was community service as a result associated with the infraction. So there was the citation to fine. There was the going online and doing it, but then there was also a community service aspect of it. And what he said was, we get it, okay, you say you don't do it. When you come before us again, that's now going to be part of what happens at the next step, because you didn't do what happened at the first step, you didn't do what we told you to do, and that can change the language of the second step, which definitely can change the language of the third step.
So I want to address board policy, so we're done. So, Brian, to your point, is the bold was what we did, we added. So what I think we can do is two things. One is your letter E will either stay as written by us, and then we'll have a new G, or sorry, new F, we'll push everything down, and then that it shall be, that this will be referred to law enforcement. So there'll be two separate letters right there, so it's really drawn out. But the point is that we are permitted by law to expel a student for drugs. That's what's already written in there. Leave it alone. So that'll be all by itself in letter E. A new letter F will slide all the rest down. We'll then have the required zero tolerance, and so it'll have in there that it's turned over to police per our zero tolerance for it. So it'll have that language specifically in there. Any other questions on the policy side? So that way it's all been clearly
so
drawn out.
One of the things that we, I don't know if someone else had something to say.
Yeah, I saw, I understand we can expel them. What other things can we do?
We're going to get there in a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got a lot of stuff.
So
that was the other thing that not suspending and doing in house.
As a district, we have the authority anywhere from do nothing all the way to expulsion. So that's what the policy. Why your policy stays that broad is just we have the range of nothing all the way up to something, expulsion.
Okay. The one thing I would recommend because I think some of the students are probably. Familiar that they may get away with their first, offense and just get some type of internal and not get it referred to the law enforcement.
Right.
Like we did the cell phone policy, yeah. I recommend we send something down so the parents recognize first offense, it's going to go to law enforcement.
Yep, it would. And because that's one of the requirements per this policy is that as superintendent, we have to push this information out. Mm-hmm. And so this one is a big one, just like your cell phone, like you're mm-hmm. saying. Here are the Board of Education is taking is a very clear zero tolerance, and now it's more that we're implementing the requirement of law enforcement to issue. Well, we're requesting that law enforcement do their part. We can't mandate anything onto them. We're going to turn it over to law enforcement, but at the end of the day, that's the best that we can do is always turn it over to them and say, please do your portion.
But they said they would do it.
I understand, but I trust
what they put forward.
I'm not. Yeah. I understand that. Exactly.
Right?
We can, but I cannot go and tell them, you will do this.
Right.
We're going to add, that's my point.
Yeah.
Well, we can take care of what we can take care of. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now, Gary, is there anything else on the policy? Because when I get into the stuff Gary would like to talk about.
I promise not to get on my soapbox tonight.
No,
you're
okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So I asked David if he would... please get into the MPS Zero Tolerance Substance Abuse Protocols.
Yeah, so what you'll see on your second sheet, and if we can, I'd like to start with the class one, the short page, not with just four. Yep. This was taken directly from the handbook, which is a little wordy, our code of conduct, and summarized it in bullet points how a school responds to drugs in the building. Class one substances, marijuana, cocaine, heroin, et cetera. What our handbook says takes place after a first offense is immediate removal, parent notification, law enforcement referral, substance abuse team meeting, required education treatment, and then for a first offense for a class one substance for use or possession is a 9-day suspension up to expulsion. And what Gary, I heard you mention what's on the table, based on conversations that we had last time.
Sure.
And that's where we would like to operate is what is the consequences or what additional things are we looking to take away or are we looking to add? Some of those things could be drug testing. Some of those things could be community service. There was discussion in here about not suspending students and sending them to in-school or detention or something from the day. All of those things are on the table right now, but what I will say is our administrators are very adamant in the fact that when a student has drugs in the building, they need to be separated. The building, the students, the teachers, everyone involved needs a break. And what that means is we don't want our students to be, I think there's administrators that don't want our students to be out for what would be almost 2 weeks for a class one infraction of possession or use in the building. But keeping them in the building, if I sell drugs to Brian and now we're both put in the same room together, Brian and I might throw down. It may not be safe. We also had some discussion about what is the expectation of the public for students who have these items in our building, if they would be okay, or a parent who witnessed this in the bathroom, Brian and David smoking marijuana, they would be okay with Brian and David staying in school. So those are the things that we would like to talk about. You'll see the same, let me count my bullets, the same six bullets for a first offense and second offense for possession or use or possession, and you'll see the same six bullets for sale or distribution or manufacturing. The only difference is the consequence. We respond to those things in the same way based on the code of conduct. I don't know if anyone else would like to add anything before we start talking about what we would like to see happen in these instances.
So to be clear, the 9-day suspension keeps them from coming before the board?
The 9-day buildings currently have the discretion to bring a student for 9 days or to expel, or I'm sorry, suspend a student for 9 days or bring them to the board. Anytime a student has large amounts of drugs on them or there is suspicion of selling, they come and see you. So our building administrators use discretion. They talk about it in that substance abuse team meeting, what is best for that student. And I would say that a lot of times they don't think that a first offense should be brought to the board for expulsion.
So you're saying a first offense of using cocaine or heroin would not or could, may not be? I mean, we're looking, so
well,
we've got marijuana,
I think they,
we got cocaine,
they,
and we got heroin.
They are all right? Class ones,
are,
right? The federal ones, government but has not dropped marijuana to a class two. But
I wish they were not. That
should a
that way,
student, but. It hasn't happened yet, and, right? Should a student have cocaine or heroin in the building? I would like to think, because they always communicate with us here in this building, that they would come and see you all.
Okay.
Despite how this is written, I understand
that
concern.
That's kind of the ambiguity.
I understand.
That it, we wish that they would be cleaned up probably to some degree. Not to say that I don't think marijuana is
I understand
relevant,
what you're saying.
But cocaine and heroin are definitely in a different category.
I would expect law enforcement would treat those differently.
Right.
Even
I
though
they're
all class one.
And it's fair to say that, you know, in Michigan, alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana, you have to be 21 to buy.
Yeah.
One is considered a class one by the federal government, another is class two. So I see the discrepancies.
Brian, to go with you had a great question earlier. One of the things you could talk about, and this is with, I can ask this question of Jeremy, is where does marijuana have to sit? Does it have to sit on the front page? Or if you flip that page over, does it sit on that back page? And I go back to this, is that unfortunately, when we think about our community and the availability of items. Not them. Again, I'm not proposing we want kids doing this. Okay, that's not it. But you're right. When it comes down to, there is a difference between a student having marijuana and a student having cocaine. There is a difference there. And so, is that part something that can be? Do we have to just more clearly define? You know, class one is these types, and then push it out there. I don't know. I'm just pushing that, giving that as an example. That would be a question.
I think that becomes challenging when we start wanting to declassify or reclassify drugs. And the problem with that becomes there's prescription drugs on here.
Yeah.
So that would be your usage of Adderalls and all those kind of things that also. So I think that we have to follow, if we're following the law, we have to follow the way it's categorized on here. And that's the way I see it, you know. I don't think we have the luxury of reclassifying drugs, and I don't think we probably should get in the habit of doing that, because that's when you get into legal issues where, you know, we start taking it in a way that it wasn't originally. That's my,
I think law enforcement, it all goes to law enforcement.
Let them
prosecuting attorney, kind of sort that out.
Right. Go ahead, Carrie.
I mean, you could do class two and marijuana on the back page. The other thing I'm looking at is, are you truly saying that someone who has marijuana of any kind comes to you, they're going to get a 9-day suspension? Because that's what this says.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's what it says.
Is that what you
do? Is that truly what's going to happen? Or is there...
That's not what's happening.
We are going to be consistent with what comes out of this conversation going forward.
So, I mean, that's my question, is...
I think we're spending this time to come up with a better way, because I feel like the conversation with our administrators and we have to do something different.
I mean, this says right here, kid comes in with mm-hmm. marijuana of any yep. kind, whether it's in a vape, in a mm-hmm. joint, mm-hmm. in a bag, yep. like whatever they've got.
Edible.
9-day suspension. Right there. That's what it says for the first offense.
So I just
want to clarify, like, are we truly willing to be that consistent?
What if we...
As administrators.
I don't like the 9 days. I would like to see a different number, but that's...
In-house suspension or in-house detention or something. Would that be favorable, yeah. Carrie, or you're not sure?
I'm okay with this. Whatever. But are administrators yeah. really going to
yep.
be consistent
they,
with...
We know that.
Marijuana. No, that's why one kid comes in with one.
I agree. I think that's
9 days is a lot. Yeah.
Or one vape pen. They're out 9 days. That's what this says, first offense. I mean,
it does.
I just want to make sure that.
Whatever we decide here, whatever we decide, they will do.
So I think we felt did we not feel that was the case?
Yeah.
It hasn't been the case previously.
I thought as a board, we were pretty unified to say we wanted that.
I agree. But well, you're trying to challenge 9 days
right.
is happening.
Right. You're trying to challenge is that really yeah. going to, if we're going to say it, we got to do it.
I don't think some kid with a vape marijuana pen in his pocket is getting the 9 days for the first offense. I don't think it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's my challenge.
If I may offer then this, is there a difference, and I'm going to, Darla said this, a while ago to me was, you know, is there a difference between alcohol, tobacco, and or cocaine or marijuana or vapes? Oh, they're all doing what? Breaking the law.
Yeah.
Okay. So should we actually say, put everything on one page and just live on the back where you have your range and think in terms of what is that instead of, so we have, you got your three different offenses. And
yeah. 0 to 9 days would be way too much ambiguity.
Well, you shorten that up. What's that first offense? What is it we would like to have for that first offense?
I don't think any of us are saying we want to have zero.
Right, but that's I'm just saying what it currently reads.
I understand what you're saying, but
I'm just saying
if we went to the back page,
yep.
then we have a problem with 0 to 9 days.
Well, yep.
So
and
could
way
I
too
change?
Much latitude.
What if I erase 0 to 9 days right now and said it will be a 5-day, which would be 1 week. In-house suspension that they will spend separated into an in-house for a first offense. That way we're not putting them back out on the streets. We're not sticking them back out there. There is accountability. They're going to law enforcement and they're doing everything else. How would anybody feel about that?
I got no problem with it. I guess my whole point last week was trying to get across that there has to be some type of pain involved with this, you know, to get their attention. We don't want them to go to the next step. You know, 9 days is a lot. Cocaine, heroin, I see it. Mm-hmm. A vape, a little bar of or a bottle of alcohol or something. Darla's right. You know, can we do something in-house so they will not forget what they did? They don't want to do it again. Mm-hmm. Instead of putting them out on the street and let the sheriff have to worry about them, you know? Is there other alternatives? 9 days is a lot for a marijuana vape. Is there something else we can come up with? Some ideas. A lot of smart people here. What can we do to get their attention so we don't have to give them 9 days off and they still get their education? For a first offense, mm-hmm. not heroin, not cocaine.
Well, I'm surprised that you're okay with a marijuana vape. I mean, why is that? I mean, I brought up the question, cocaine and heroin. In my opinion, cocaine and heroin, those are going to be expulsions. I can't even imagine those would ever be a suspension.
I agree.
Thank you. Nobody's going to object.
Right. Yeah, I'm just trying to distinguish what's more than likely to happen.
Right.
We don't have fentanyl on here.
We don't. But so you're okay with the idea that the marijuana vape is... Not as serious. It sounds like you're telling me now it's not as serious as I thought you would think it was.
They're all serious.
Okay.
But if you get to the point that you're, if you're at that age,
yeah,
and you've got cocaine or heroin,
right,
you're getting that money from somewhere.
Sure.
Cocaine does not cost nothing. It
right,
costs
right.
a lot.
Right.
If you've got cocaine on you, you're involved in something you probably shouldn't be involved with.
Some distribution, yeah, I would think.
Probably. More than likely.
Right.
Marijuana vape, could have got it from mom and dad. I don't know.
Okay.
But the point I'm trying to make is the thing with the alcohol and the marijuana, first offense, can we find something that causes them some pain, gets their attention, so they don't want to come back a second time without giving them a 9-day vacation and let the police department deal with them.
So do you think the in-house suspension is, I think that's a lot more painful than sending them home for a 9-day vacation.
I agree with you.
And I think I can't imagine anybody that would like that. They come to school and they're literally stuck in a room all day and they can't do anything else except, I think so. But again, I'm not 15 anymore.
Bring a bag lunch. You got a video.
Would it be reclassified?
You're putting marijuana in a different classification.
No. Oh, I misspoke. I said as a first offense, could we look at any offenses? Do we believe that an in-house suspension is more severe than some of the suspensions? It was just an idea. I wasn't sure how he felt about that. You know, excuse me for misspeaking on the
I just want to make sure you're not saying that, right?
No.
Because the federal government has given us these designations.
Yes.
Right.
So we'll start calling them class one, class two.
So could I suggest maybe honoring, I guess, the wishes of the administrators and honoring the wishes of the board, where it is 5 days and any, because I do think our administrators and our students need to understand the seriousness of the students definitely need to understand the seriousness of it. So sticking with the number of five, but allowing our administrators to determine you're going to be home for 2 days, you're coming back to do 3 days sitting in a room. And you're going to be doing five total, but it does allow the building to breathe a little bit, and something else to think about too. And I know that no students are listening right now, but there was
I can guarantee they're not.
There was a time when a student was brought into this room for a third strike on tobacco, and I must have had five heads. Because that's how I was looked at by bringing a student to the board for a third tobacco offense. At least that was my interpretation. So that might need to be looked at as well. Like our current policy is two strikes for marijuana, unless we think you're selling and have a large amount. But it is three strikes for a cigarette. I don't know if that's appropriate, and based on what conversations that happened. It didn't seem like the folks who were on the board thought that was appropriate either.
So your
tobacco's not on here.
So tobacco is on the second page.
So you're saying that
second page.
So you're saying
class
that two.
That's not though.
It's not.
Why did you say tobacco?
It's
talking vaping.
It's
tobacco.
It's a class two.
But
so we need to list it up.
So you're saying
it's in the handbook, but not on these cliff notes.
So you're saying that when it came to tobacco, third strike brought you here, but when it came to drugs, it did not send you here. I'm very confused on that, because we were like, that was our biggest problem was
second and third offenses for marijuana.
But that wasn't consistent.
It was not.
So when we found out that was being inconsistent,
that's fair.
And that wasn't being done. And then out of the blue, you show up with someone with three cigarette or vape.
Because we were trying to be consistent I understand.
Right, more inconsistent.
What David's
everybody got brought in.
The nice thing about what David is proposing is it's like this. Today I gave, brought in something. Gave it to Gary, and then Gary snitches me out. And so now, only because she's sitting out there, Angela's like, okay, Andy, you're going to do Monday, Tuesday in school. You're out of school the last 3 days of the week. And then, but you're going to go and do your 3 days of out of school at the beginning and come back. So that way we're not together in school. So that,
yeah, that makes sense.
That would give a
the snitch could be, yeah.
That,
yeah,
that gives the break, it gives the and
responsible party.
But the other part that it helps with is it's you have to manage the number of students that are in the in-school suspension room. Too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
Well, the hope what the hope is that that decreases as well, this becomes a thing.
Sure.
We
but
understand
that's the part that
with everything well, there's pain involved,
yeah.
And it's not just pain.
Do we have
yes.
a staff member for that already?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's already done.
And I would say cocaine, heroin, anything that's being sold, distributed.
Yeah.
That needs to go straight to the
yeah, absolutely.
Expulsion. Get them out. Expel.
Yeah.
They can appeal it if they need to for some crazy reason, but.
So the definition of that is what became ambiguous because there were things that we saw that we thought met the criteria that we were informed that didn't feel like it met the criteria. So there was a unclear. So for me, it's more of if you have beyond a single use, you now fall into a whole different category, which leads you to sale and distribution, or because I remember the whole, you can't call it this, you can't call it that, but if you have more than a single use on you,
we had
then,
the kid with the backpack full of drugs.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And do we
trying to
spell
be
it
diplomatic
out,
in way.
Or should we say narcotics?
In the handbook, it says there is a list of definitions in the handbook for class one.
Oh, I have it here.
Yep.
We haven't talked about meth or...
Class 1 includes but not limited to marijuana, cocaine, heroin, LSD, GHB, ecstasy, designer drugs, scheduled prescription drugs. And then Class 2 is including but not limited to alcohol, vapes, inhalable substances, over-the-counter medicines, or lookalikes.
Did you say fentanyl for...
I did not.
I don't think fentanyl
is
any of
them. Fentanyl is obviously the issue right now.
And I think what I'm enjoying how this dialogue is going, but we're always thinking and we always experience things when Mr. Heck is busted for marijuana a first time and then he comes back and he has a cigarette on him. Does that mean we're going to be taking him to the board for a second offense of a non, you know?
I think we might have to do that to start with. Just do it to start with. I mean, we might have to take on some of those extra things to start with to let people know we're serious. And we have to be willing to take some pain, too, to say, if we have to sit here for multiple days in a row in order to solve and get this under control, then I'm willing to do it.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't it be nice to not have to do it?
I think you all are willing to do it.
Yeah, we're all willing to do it.
Be lovely.
You know,
yeah.
If we've got to sit here for 10 of them on one night, then that's what we'll do.
Right. Mm-hmm. So and everybody has to do their thing.
Absolutely. I think you're right. Carrie's right. Dollar's right. I don't think anybody wants to take the discretion away from the administration. We don't. But we're trying to find something else to get our point across to these kids. You know, do I classify cigarettes and heroin in the same situation? Obviously not. You know, do we need to actually completely spell it out that cigarettes, alcohol, marijuana, and everything else? First offense. I'm talking first offense and not selling anything. And come up with a way. Andy had a good point. He had a good point. Give 2 days outside. Come back 3 days in-house suspension. Something to get their attention. Say, you don't want to do this again.
And a big portion
we're not going to tolerate it.
And a big portion of the day is being spent, why you shouldn't do this, why you shouldn't do this, like the mantra over and over again, you know,
sure.
of an education component of
right
it.
Right on the
well, and I think that...
Yeah, through the Bart Simpson, right?
What I heard earlier when we said the referral to law enforcement, I heard that we can't control if they write out a citation, but...
Oh, we can encourage
all
down.
I mean, they don't work for us.
Nope.
We don't employ them, but can't we have an agreement?
Oh, we can. We can.
With them that
no, we can go to
we're
them.
Sending somebody to them for drugs,
yeah.
that we do expect a citation.
Yep. I can have that conversation with both the sheriff and with the director so they're aware of our our board policy that we expect, we do expect zero tolerance and a citation be issued.
And they both support that.
I would think they would.
They do. Yep.
They do.
I would include your both support as well.
Yes. Yep. Get the job. So what we're going to do
well,
is.
The only, go ahead. The other thing I wanted to mention is Gary said, you know, give discretion to the administrators. The only thing I don't feel comfortable with would be that zero.
Zero for tobacco.
So, like, yeah. Somebody comes to you for whatever it is. I don't care if it's a cigarette, mm-hmm. vape,
zero's
marijuana,
good.
Whatever. Send them home, count it as a day out, and then decide how much they're going to get for in-house, out of school, whatever. Mm-hmm. But zero, I don't think, should be
not
an option.
No.
One to five?
Yeah.
One so, to.
There needs to be consistency.
That's it. Just stay with the five.
That's the main thing.
Let's stay with the five. You said let the school have 2 days off.
One offense.
With them away. Yeah. Then three days in-house.
Yeah.
5 days.
5 days, it can be a mix.
Yes, exactly.
And that was first offense.
This was first offense.
Yeah.
Not
and,
distribution.
And we're, and it will be abundantly clear to our administrators that if it is not a class two or marijuana, they're coming. They will be seeing you.
Like them not, I've ever seen the hallways again.
Yep. Yeah. Fair. So if I can get into some, into the practical of how things will operate, we're going to get this board policy put together. We'll get that emailed out to you. We have a lot of great notes on the class one, class two. Gary, I was already kind of thinking in your direction of, on some of these, spelling them out very particularly. Others, you know, I think back to, because we know the areas that we're struggling on. We'll put together that plan. It'll get emailed out to you. You can't respond because that just creates that problem right there. But we'll bring it right back in. Understand this is something that when it comes down to it, I don't need the board to approve this. Okay,
right.
I just need more of a consensus. Like, hey, yeah, okay, we're no one's like going, nope, I think we need to be doing this because then we can implement it instantly straight into the student handbook, which could be on. Let's see, we're at the 25th of this month. So that's not a problem right there. It'll still take on the policy of the two readings, but again, the enforcement of what's in place is still in play. Okay, you're just calling out on board policy, like, hey, we're doing this. So that would be on the 25th of the month, and then going to operation on September.
Can I make one thing clear in this? When I went through the procedure, a lot of purple ink on
it. Is that the student handbook?
That's the student handbook.
Yes. That's
one of the things that struck me is when there was a self-referred user that a student said that they are using drugs, and it says parent involvement will be solicited as soon as it's appropriate. I think that parenter rights, they have a right to know what's going on with their children. We're talking about drugs. We're not talking about, I don't know, what else you wouldn't tell a parent about. Mm-hmm. But I if we can make clear on this, that all of these things, because there's a lot in here that I don't think is applicable anymore based on the way it's written, but
we
everything should be straight up to the parent.
Yeah.
If
we're
we can just clarify that.
We're
going to
go through there, but that's where we'll find out. I want to find out more on that part. But no, we already know what the handbook has to be.
Yeah. The substance abuse team will meet with the student and parent as soon as possible. Like, you know, these are things the parent needs to know. And this was on possession with intent to deliver.
Yeah.
And who is the substance abuse team?
It has evolved a little bit, but typically it is a counselor, social worker, and administrator.
Okay.
A counselor and a social worker, one or the other.
Whoever is available at that time.
So
I mean, not every.
It's all in one other person.
Typically, more. I know the high school makes decisions together frequently when they meet the administration and the social workers or counselors that are assigned to those caseloads. So.
Can we add something else into the student handbook with this? Whether we do this or not, you could put it in there that the board has decided to occasionally have the sheriff's department dogs go through the school searching for drugs.
Well, we can do that.
I mean, I know we can do it.
Yeah.
I think that might be somewhere in whether it talks about what is and what is not individual property, like lockers and the locker search portion. I think it might be appropriate.
It'd be nice to read, if a kid read that and says, geez, they're going to bring in the dogs one of these days. I better be careful.
I appreciate how cute you are tonight that the students are reading the handbook.
Right.
So I do
appreciate
that.
You know what made me think of it
deal.
When I saw
that's like
I got my moments.
It made me think about it when he came in.
We will call out these adjustments in the student handbook. So kids.
Do what we did with cell phones. Put the message out that, hey, I mean, it was all a big deal. By the time they went in school, they already knew it was a place. I saw you, and it made me think about it with ACAP. Was this is a safety security issue. Yep. And when I look through the funding sources, there is funding and source and money available for these kind of issues. Glad you saw you. I made me think of that because there is money available in some of these grants for things like this. So.
Okay. So I appreciate the discussion. Look for documents coming from us on this. So thank you very much. That's all I have tonight, sir.
Okay. Any public commentary, Brian?
Andy, are you going to speak?
Just a quick question.
Okay.
Happen.
That was the he said, she said situation we had.
We had that already.
Sure.
I think, Yvonne, that's what this is all about. We're trying to, we know what's going on in our community. We get it. You know, we can't stop it. We're trying to get our little portion of the community under control as best that we can. That's what this is all about.
It's really a valid concern, though.
Yeah.
It really is.
But it's also part of what the administrators and knowing their students and past experiences. Yeah. So,
It's a possibility.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks, Yvonne.
We encourage the single-use bathrooms.
Okay. That concludes our agenda. Can I get a motion to adjourn the work session?
Motion to adjourn.
Do I have support?
Support.
Show of hands. The Monroe Public Schools Board of Education work session for Tuesday, August 11th, 2026 is adjourned. The time is 6:57 p.m. So we will reconvene.